Welcome back to the BIM Heroes podcast. This is the sixth episode here on the day. The conversations we're going to be talking about XR, VR, and AR. Hello, guys. Wanted to just take the time to allow you guys to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Gary Cowan. I'm head of digital construction for Kane Group. Kane Group are a multidiscipline built and services design and build contractor based here in the UK. We design and build large scale MEP built and services in Revit primarily, but are actually design and build. So we physically build the buildings as well as design them, most using Autodesk products, and we take it to a very sort of minutiae of detail in the models that are all produced to sort of very high LOD 400, which enables a prefabrication DFMA workflow then that really benefits us and our clients.
Well, thanks for having me, Cody. My name is Gabe Paez. I'm the head of product for XR at Autodesk. Prior to joining Autodesk, I was the founder of a company called The Wild that had two softwares, The Wild and Prospect by RSVR. Both of these are collaboration tools for the AEC industry to work together in augmented and virtual reality. I joined Autodesk about a year and a half ago and have been ever since working on the future of XR and how it connects to the Autodesk platform.
Thank you. What does each of those mean? So each of these acronyms, we've got a ton of acronyms in construction. There's a ton of people that don't know what they mean and what are some of the differences.
Yeah, sure. So I'll take that. We'll start with XR. So XR really is the broad spectrum of technologies that are also known as spatial computing. So the spatial computing is just the simple idea that we experience digital content from a human point of view. So usually this is going to be wearing a headset, being able to look around and seeing some level of either the physical or the digital world that is surrounding us. So then you have augmented reality, which is more embedded with the physical world, and then some digital content all the way to virtual reality, which is going to be most digital content and no physical content. Mixed reality is right in the middle. And so it is a spectrum that defines all of these different technologies. But interestingly, in 2023, where we are really right now, XR has sort of taken the forefront where it used to be we had VR devices and AR devices and MR devices and all these different acronyms to talk about positions on this spectrum. Now we're moving more toward having XR-based devices. So devices that are capable of either being, you know, showing you the physical world and then showing you digital content on top of that, or totally virtualizing and putting you in an entirely virtual space like virtual reality.
And where is Kane on that spectrum of where we're at?
Well, I mean, we've embraced all these technologies as they've appeared on the market. Personally, I've always been a tech enthusiast. I've always been a bit of a geek. Always been a gamer at heart, really, you know, sort of grew up through the early 2000s watching the technological revolution of the graphics industry, changing from, you know, simple 2D sprites to complex 3D geometry, right up until the latest breakthroughs from NVIDIA with ray tracing and all pathfinding technologies. So I've always had a keen interest in that. And when we started to really get into the BIM and Kane's about 10 years ago, when we started to see the possibilities of that technology, we embraced it very much so. I'm fortunate to work for a really forward-thinking company who are willing to take risks when it comes to investing money in new technologies and stuff. So in around late 2017, when I managed to actually get my hands on a VR headset on a personal basis, and I spent a bit of time in VR and seen the possibilities of the technology, it was almost eventual that the two worlds would collide and I would seek to see my BIM models in that same ecosphere. And it was around about that time that I came upon the Aris VR guys and Prospect. And for me, that was the game changer for us. You know, there was a lot of different, we've seen the Wild as well, and they were very good, but the Prospect for us really was the easiest solution of all the softwares. It gave us the versatility of the workflows to be able to colorize the 3D data. And we used it to sort of open up new channels of ways of taking in the model. We have a very good big team in Cairns that are digital construction professionals and can use all of these various technologies, but a lot of the important stakeholders that are involved in the projects aren't Revit guys. They don't use Revit. They're not computer literate. Even some of our senior guys spent 20 years on the tools, and if you were to ask them to look at a digital model, it would be a horror story. And like, you expect me to try and take all this new stuff in? So it's a way of changing perceptions of the digital model and changing the way that it's consumed, getting away from the dollhouse model. And as our models became more and more intricate and more detailed, the ability to QA them from a remote standpoint became smaller and smaller. A lot of the fine detail was lost in the overall picture. So the ability to snap into it and almost dissect the models from the inside out was revolutionary for us at the time. And I was just fortunate, you know, when I was a child and I was bought anything, I immediately took it apart. That's how I like to look at things. And it was no different with the software package from Autodesk. And immediately I sought out contact with the developers and the teams to try and push, you know, real world situations in some of our models. Certainly when we first used the system, it was very slow. It didn't really react too well to our models, but with a continual feedback loop with the development team, you know, over time that was sort of rectified with the optimization of code. And then we're working towards the next gen stuff now at the minute, which is just groundbreaking stuff. So it's fortunate for us that, you know, we've been able to be part of that journey along with the Autodesk guys, and it's exciting times ahead.
Yeah, and what's some of the use cases that you're starting to see that have been really successful?
Yeah, so largely what we've seen traction on is design review, constructability reviews, people coming in, and it's interesting. So XR as a technology presents a lot of opportunities for AEC, all the way from early phase ideation straight through to operations and maintenance of the building itself, post-construction. But you have to look at where we are today and look at where the industry is today and what the industry needs. What we found early on is, you know, you can't disrupt the whole process all at once. Mm-hmm. The idea that tomorrow you're going to be spending 8 hours of your day in an XR headset is... Right. It's too much. It's a big leap for people to take all at once. But where we can really create value right now is to say, what this technology is really good for is just giving everyone on the team confidence that what we've designed is going to work and that we're aligned on you know, the phases of execution and you know, our clash detection, all of this stuff. So it's right now primarily a review tool, a tool to come in and get that confidence from the team, from the client often as well, that we're aligned. And so those are the dominant use cases that we're rolling out right now. You're designing your model in, you know, likely a design tool like Revit. You bring that into a VR-rich environment, and you meet in there with the team, really understand and track issues, understand and develop that confidence that we've got the right ideas here, and we've looked at this model from every angle. We've looked at every single pipe, every single conduit, every single fastener, and everything is ready for construction.
Yeah, and on your front, what's been the most use case for each of the different models?
Well, primarily, as Gabe says, you know, it's primarily a review tool in Cairns at the moment. Looking at probably logistical problems as well, you know, and very tight spaces and sequencing certainly of very complex and multi-layered services. The VR gives a much deeper insight to the order of fixings and the puzzle that the guys sort of see on site when they're trying to figure out. You know, it's quite a hard ask of a lot of guys on the ground, boots on the ground, to hand them all of these documentations and say, here's a really complex MEP space, go and put it together. It's a very large mechano set, it's very complex, and these technologies allow us to break it down into more simpler blocks and representations and visualizations, whereas in olden days and 20 years ago when I started, it was very much two-dimensional drawings and an expectation that the guys doing the drawings had, oh, well, the guys on site will fix that. You know, they have the expertise to figure out that little corner that I can't quite get my head around at this stage. And what we've found in the 20 years from that it's completely flipped on its face now. All the BIM model is now central to everything in the business, from all aspects of the company, from design through to marketing, takeoffs, you know, tracking everything, health and safety, logistics. It's turned on its face where the guys on site now don't have that expectation anymore of having the experience. And what we find is that generation of engineers that were able to roll up their sleeves and do the work on very little information are actually disappearing. They're retiring now. Mm-hmm. And the guys and girls that are falling behind are the younger generation who have been raised on Facebook and Meta and mm-hmm. devices and wouldn't understand old school 2D drawings or wouldn't even have the capability to take a bespoke drawing and see the errors in it and fix it on site. They have to be held by the hand. So the whole technology of BIM and digital construction and DFMI workflows takes that decision making from the site and brings it into a controlled factory environment where I'd prefer to make all the mistakes in the digital model where there isn't the pressure of time and someone standing, you know, money. And
there's nothing more demoralizing than watching somebody that use their hands to build something and then you have to tell them to tear it out. It's just so demoralizing when you see something like that.
Yeah, but in the human aspect and level, yeah, it's very, you know, you put your heart and soul into putting something together and then somebody walks in and says, sorry, you missed something. You have to rip half that back out again. So it's better all around. You know, it saves time, it saves effort, money. But it requires a certain skill set of person now, whereas CAD drafters 20 years ago literally just drew polylines and circles and it was an art. And today people doing BIM almost need to have an NVQ and pipe fitting and duct fitting and really understand what it is they're putting together. They can create a beautiful MEP model, but when you actually drill right down into it and look at how it's connected and ups and downs with pipeworks, a beautiful model can be taken apart very, very quickly by somebody with a bit of knowledge. And that's the gap that I see at the moment, is that the technology has increased exponentially, but the people following behind, there's a gap there. The schools and universities aren't teaching. You don't learn how to use industry tools, or you speak to engineers coming to university and they're still doing calculations in Excel and they're still using 2D AutoCAD when the industry is using Revit. So I think there's a lot of work and feedback loop into universities and schools needs to happen.
And that's where the challenges come into play, where you've got this, you know, situation where you want to take the headset out to the field, but then safety, and especially in the US, has come up where, are they blocking the view and they become less safe if they got something in front of their eyes and everything? I wanted to talk to you. Where's that at in that process of bringing it out to the field?
Yeah, so the on-site workflows definitely have value.
No doubt.
There's anyone, you know, you can make that transition from saying the documentation we have right now on the job site and the translation of like, oh, looking at this and where does that align with this? And what was the, you know, engineer thinking when they made this? This is hard and creates issues on site. It slows down. There are miscommunications that happen. And so putting everything in context, having alignment of the BIM model and BIM data with the physical environment definitely has value to reduce errors and streamline the process. The challenges we face, safety is one for sure and a big one. This is a dangerous environment often, like by the nature of
the industry.
Exactly what it is. So the bar is very high to create safety and rightfully so. But also there's connectivity is a huge challenge on the job site. And the accuracy is essential. And so there are many
technical point and stuff like that.
Exactly. There are many technical and societal challenges that sort of are slowing our progress in this way. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean so we are today in a position where there's a lot of potential here. We definitely know this is the future of the industry, and we've got to chart our path slowly and methodically toward that end goal. And and really, you know, mitigate these factors, whether it's safety, whether it's connectivity. There are solutions for this. It's just we gotta slowly make our way through them and be thoughtful about our approach in doing so.
What do you think on that front with the safety aspect? You know, you're putting a headset on and you get the OSHA guy comes out there and he says, yeah, I get what you're trying to do, but I'm trying to make sure you stay safe and do what you're trying to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, we demoed the Trimble XR10 last year, which is a head-mounted, heads-up display AR device. And I thought it was quite a good product. Certainly mitigated the security problems because it's a see-through visor. It's not completely opaque, so you're always aware of your surroundings. And it used the bone-conducting earphones, so right. That your ears actually weren't covered by an earpiece. So in terms of safety, while it's not ideal, it's still blocking your view. It did work. As time progresses and technology progresses, I'm sure it'll disappear. Like everything, all the problems that we're facing with all these new technologies, I think the technology will be the source of it. So much in like Tesla are using machine learning and you know, taking constant pictures. Mixed reality headsets in the future could well have an onboard AI system that's constantly tracking the surroundings. Yeah. And if there was a danger approaching, like a moving vehicle or something, it would very much flag it in your field of view and say, danger, you're about to get drove over here or you're about to fall in the hole. You know, if the headset had a LiDAR scanner on board, it would be sensing exactly where you were. And it could be part of the safety system where there could be no-go zones, red zones. And as soon as you approach that zone, it would flag like a digital fence, much as the technology at the moment does. Again, these are all legitimate problems today, but I think that in 5 years' time, we'll not be having these same problems. You know, I think technology will be the source of the problem and both the cure of the problem at the same time.
Yeah, you make a really good point that also, I think a lot of people see XR as a technology just trying to reproduce the physical world
virtually.
You know, the idea of just putting you inside of a digital twin, and this is the end goal. I think in many ways, the reality is exactly what he's talking about here, is that we're not just trying to reproduce it. We're actually trying to make it better in some foundational way. That is the opportunity that we face. So whether it's an augmented reality, like you say, alerting someone on the job site to dangers, and or even in virtual reality, giving you the capability to get into a very tight corner of the building that you couldn't physically access if you were in the physical building, because a lot of these spaces are very tight. The access points are, you know, not big enough for humans. And so this is the beauty of XR, is we can actually dissect the building in a way that is beyond even what is possible in the physical world. And that's amazing. I mean, this is a new human capability in a way,
right?
Giving a superpower to these creators and builders and construction professionals in a way that is not possible in any other way.
Yeah, I think the training aspect is really fascinating too. We've got this big labor shortage that's staring us down. We can see it. And every year it's getting worse and worse and worse. Do you see that XR or VR could be used in the future to help train different things?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it already is.
Yeah.
This is also one of the other prime use cases that is really viable right now today. And, you know, this is beyond even AEC. Like, I was doing some work for the aerospace industry before I founded The Wild, doing you know, this sort of training and installation assistance in mixed reality. So this is really doable. It is really valuable because you can scale training modules in a way, not only distribute them to a lot of people, but also make them more interesting in a way that's really important. Like there are a lot of training videos that people click next through and don't actually pay attention. And activating your body, moving through a training simulation in XR it's just more interesting. And so I think this is a really promising use case.
So yeah, talking about that collaboration, you know, what is the proper moment, do you believe, that XR, AR, and VR begin to show up? Is it all the way in the design process? Is it, you know, does the GC kind of lead that charge? Where do you see the best use cases in terms of the timing of when it's used?
timing in the project life
cycle? Yeah, in the project life cycle.
Yeah, so.
Because, I mean, like VR could be used for, you know, if you're looking at a design of like an apartment and you just want to get the basis of the concept. Mm-hmm. I just want to dig deep into that.
Yes. It should be at any stage, you know.
Yeah.
From early project conception.
Client-driven.
Right through to final.
You think client-driven or you think...
Yes. I mean, it depends on the company that you're working for. You know, certainly we use 3D visualizations as a strong marketing tool and a capability as a company, and that we're able to visualize our designs and our layouts to our clients well in advance of it being procured or fabricated. And I think that key is, you know, early adoption kind of sets the precedent for the whole job. So the earlier you're able to incorporate this technology into the process, the better. You know, it'll only ever go in one direction, I think.
Yeah, and more we are seeing people come to us like it's truly owner-driven in the sense that it can be a requirement on the project. We've seen more and more projects like this where XR is listed as a deliverable. So because it creates more confidence, it creates more alignment, you see things you wouldn't otherwise, and that's important to owners. Clients, they're spending a lot of money on a job. They want to make sure it's exactly what they want. So, and that it's right, there aren't issues and so forth. So, I think this is an interesting thing that has developed over the years. In the early days, Kane Group starting in the very early days, they were pioneers of figuring this out. Now, honestly, it's much more mainstream in AEC. Like, I see the amount of companies, especially leading companies, using VR in some portion of their projects, and some of starting to mandate them on projects is really exciting. It's great to see.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that you're also starting to see is this development of underground utilities. I want to go there for a second because that's something that we've always had, but there's never been a really good way to capture that. So now instead of looking at, let's say, on the planning on the front end, let's look at it where we capture something, reality capture of some sort, and we bring that into a, you know, AR situation or XR. Any concepts of where you've seen that being very successful, like subsurface stuff?
Well, we do quite a lot of infrastructure design in our projects. For example, we're working for Wilmot Dixon here at the moment in a large phase gas coin estate, as it's known as. And it's a very large development of multi-building 10 or 11 different sites across a very large site. And we designed all of the district heating distribution network and all of the telecommunication cable pools out in the field, and that was one of the first tests we had for the VR system once we had established it and proven it with the Claridge's Hotel was the scalability of it. Yes, it worked in the basement down and underground, but what about if we look at this entire scale? So very early on, it was always a technological hurdle. How do we get the civil guy's drainage information into the 3D model? He doesn't work in Revit.
Right.
How do we find out all the existing services in the roads? That was a 2D CAD. You know, there was lots of different sources of information that had to be collated and transformed and brought together in a federated model. But we got there in the end, and we have a system now where we can literally walk the site in VR and make the top of surface and the ground clear, the glass. And then you can see all the services in 3D and the roads, and it follows the landscape. And it made it very, very easy and very simple to coordinate quite complex systems out in the roads with the landscape. You could see where there was, you know, falls in the land and hills and stuff. And very quick, it made quite a difficult task so much more easier. With the VR tool as a background, you could very clearly see where you'd made a modeling error very, very quickly.
Yeah.
It could be rectified and studied very, very quickly. But it was the collaboration between the different design teams, which was the breakthrough. So once we had received the layouts from the structural and civil guy, I was able to do a complete site walk in VR, recording it as I went, making markups on his manhole positions, the height of them, where it was running to, crossovers. About a 15-20 minute video covered the entire site, and it was sent to him with a basic hand sketch markup of notes on positions and keyframes in the video. And that was sent to him, and he was able to review that within a 2 or 3 days and come back to me with a proposal. And if we looked at the traditional way of doing that, that could have been a 3 or 4 week process. And we brought that right down to a matter of days. And we do try to push this technology with our clients, but there's a very slow uptake in the industry that we see. People generally allow us to demonstrate what we can do, and then they're like, wow, what is this sorcery? They don't understand it.
Right.
And they're a wee bit sort of hesitant to take the step, even though they don't require any license fees because we pay the license. So I think that whole mindset, it's like someone said in one of the other presentations there today, it was the same, and everyone started walking about with the Bluetooth headsets on the mobiles. There was that initial like everyone was like, oh, check, look at your man over there running about with that poser. People didn't like it at first. It was a bit, rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. And I do honestly think that VR is the same. A lot of people think that it's a gimmick. A lot of people think that it's toys. You know, people think you're playing Beat Saber when you're standing looking at legit work. So I think that we'll have to get over that hurdle a wee bit, and have VR as a legitimate tool, you know, and seen that way as a legitimate thing to use, and not just the client wants it, so we'll do it, or you know, we're just trying to score points on technology ratings or anything like that. It really is a useful tool that can be used.
Yeah, and I think that that's the piece, is that trying to bring these two worlds together, because if we're ever going to get to a world where we have a digital twin, which is a piece of where we're trying to get to, we have to stop looking at it as a static environment. It needs to be dynamic. And I feel like this is one of the areas that the industry can become more dynamic, because it's a dynamic process. You're moving, you're seeing something, and you're interacting with the real world while you're seeing the overall design of what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, and it's also about just all of this data coming together. I mean, this is a big part of Beyond XR, the platform vision that Autodesk is working on with Forma, is to stop looking at all of these disparate pieces of data as files, but rather let's query all of it in union really easily. And you can imagine now how XR plays into this, where it's just an interface to all of that data, whether it's a site scan, a Revit model, Navisworks, you know, Civil 3D, all of this coming together into a common data-rich environment that can be queried as one. I mean, that is really, that's the promise. That's what we're all headed for here.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, tend to agree. You know, the technology just needs a bit more time to ferment, I think, in the industry. And I think as the technology gets better and the headsets get lighter, and I think the adoption rates will increase, and I really look forward to it. And not just the hardware, but the software as well. You know, the experiences that we have need to also get better. They're quite limited at the moment, just with tessellation and vertices and stuff like that. But as I say, go back 5, 10 years ago when we started, and you had to be tethered to a really expensive PC. In 5 years' time, now we're standalone. Where will we be in 5 years' time again? You know, I think we'll be having a very different conversation in 5 years' time.
Yeah, and do you think one of the things I find interesting too is, let's take this a little bit further into construction. Do you think, you know, reality capture of any standpoint, as progress continues, could get added into an AR, XR environment?
Well, the interesting thing about that is actually, I mean, these headsets are doing reality capture.
Right.
And that's exactly how they work.
Yep.
And they're, you know, scanners that are positioning you in space and scanning the environment. So,
and essentially you're creating a visual twin.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. So in many ways, I think that what could result is actually more of a real-time reality capture, if not looking at that as like, oh, now we will do our reality capture, but rather it's, if you have multiple people on site wearing headsets, moving around different points in the day, being able to bring that and connectivity, which is still the challenge here, but there is promise in, you know, the work toward these advanced tech connectivity devices, even for remote sites, is really exciting. So in any case, I think the promise is that these two technologies could collide in a very interesting way to create this real-time digital twin, you know, just by the nature of people having XR headsets on the job site.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, reality capture is something that we have invested heavily in the last sort of 12 months in Kane. We have our own in-house equipment in the Leica BLK, so we're actively collecting reality capture on our sites now. And it has been something that I have been looking at into how do we, instead of using a prospect model and having it almost, as I would say, cartoonish or very basic, how hard would it be to take my reality capture and mesh it and then bring the textured mesh into a VR system and have the backdrop as the actual site rather than the theoretical. We're kind of doing it in a distributed way now, and that we end up with a very accurate model through scan to BIM processes, but surely I could just put my mesh straight in and have that as the backdrop and then be able to do a mixed reality within VR. You know, it's like Inception, it's like an onion, how many layers can we go? But I think reality capture in itself is a key process in the construction industry, and it's also seeing a surge at the moment in popularity and use across the industry. So as Gabe says, that these two technologies should never ever compete. I think they should always intertwine, and VR should just be a viewing capsule to this technology. VR should have the capability of ingesting point cloud data or mesh. But I think the problem is with the technology, it's, you know, some of the point clouds that you're getting are massive.
And trying to bring that down to
it's just not feasible. It's not feasible. And then when you look at cloud network streaming, and it's very difficult. I know Revisto have had some success in bringing point clouds into their ecosystem and streaming it across the internet, which I think is fantastic. I've seen some examples of that. But again, I think reality capture needs to be considered and not sort of a bolt-on. I think it really does need to be a consideration going forward for VR and AR, because it, as you said, it's reality. It's augmented reality, it's mixed reality, it's virtual reality, but the key word to them all is reality. It's how we consume our reality and inspect it and augment it with data and inspect it. And I think that's just the way it will go.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, a lot of this is actually possible now. It's just very hard.
Right.
And there are a lot of manual steps in the way of just getting to the final product. And, you know, not just capture, but, you know, upload, simplification, meshing, tuning. Like, these are like pipeline steps. One interesting thing here is just maybe the dark horse is going to be the optimizations that AI can create in that pipeline to take a lot of those manual steps and difficult steps. You know, they're often take you know, the right eye to make the to optimize this for instance a point cloud and to automate it. So this is going to be an interesting also secondary collision with this technology in terms of the improvements that AI can create in that sort of data pipeline that can then make data more accessible and also optimized for mobile devices.
Yeah, and what about the analytics piece of it? So now, you know, we dive into the visual piece of it. What can we get back analytically, and then how could that be used to help train people?
I've seen an example recently in Digital Construction Week where I think it was the Unity guys were using their software package Unity Reflect Review, and they actually had brought in a point cloud scan of quite a heavy MEP space.
Right.
And then they actually simulated a fire emergency with people in it in VR headsets, and like, they played the audio across the stage, and it was extremely loud. It woke quite a few people up, I think, that were maybe having a wee sleep during the presentation, but it showed the application of that technology in a completely different way that no one had ever thought about for VR training, you know, and things like that. I think just really, really good idea of how to use technology and the immersion that it brings. And I think you'll start to see it forking in several directions within the AEC, and certainly for us in Keynes. I used to just be a BIM guy, and now I'm a visualization artist. I'm a reality capture specialist. You know, you kind of, once you get into one part of the industry, it forks into several other directions. And I think the key is just to try and keep on par with them all, you know?
Yeah. that type of simulation is really fascinating because also you don't necessarily have to wait for the final building to scan it and then do the simulation, but rather, you know, in the design phase, understanding the effects, you know, what a fire in this position could look like or what an earthquake's going to do. And then being in the building, you know, while that's happening and understanding and reacting to it, it's exciting in the way that it can not just help us not make bad decisions, not miss things, but make better decisions.
Right.
And
just puts you in the center of the decision-making process because you're taking everything that you've planned and we talk about at this conference and you're putting it in the field where you can actually see it and back check that.
Yeah, experience it because you're there. You're standing in that building and, you know, that's some valuable information for humans, especially creative engineers, architects, to have in the early stage to think of something new that could really fundamentally improve this design.
Where do you think we go from here to progress this forward?
I think AI will be the next logical step.
Yeah.
An integration of AI into this sort of technology.
What type of analytics or what type of conclusions do you think the AI is going to?
I think that AI really is the revolution that AI is going to have is at the minute the bandwidth limit is becoming the human to computer interface. So once a human tells a computer to do something, it can do it at breakneck speed. The bottleneck now is the instruction from the human. So typing a sentence in or clicking 50 buttons in Revit to do something.
Right.
I see AI coming in the next 10, 15 years and revolutionizing the human interface with all of these systems. So whenever I open a Revit session, I'll just be sitting back with a cup of tea and saying, Revit, draw me a piece of duct the size of this length along that wall, turn it, connect it to every air terminal. You know, I do see a shift and a paradigm shift in everybody's workflows from a manual input to a more humanistic voice orientated, and even maybe with the Neuralink from, you know, how far do you go from Elon Musk gets his Neuralink going? You could just imagine what the built-in services could look like, and the AI will disseminate that and build it for you. And I think in all, there's so many operations in what we do at the minute in the software that are all manual, as you said, Gabe, and a lot of man hours are wasted pushing buttons and converting from one type to the other. I think all of that could be automated very quickly with AI, and mundane tasks can be just eradicated and it'll be a button click solution. But I think the biggest impact AI will have will be the human aspect of the ability to talk to computers, and the computer will understand, much like ChatGPT, you can ask it a specific thing and it'll
write a whole article or do
it. I've already had ChatGPT writing Python scripts for me for Dynamo.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous how quickly it's happening. But for me, I think the low-hanging fruit is just the speed of processing and making computers faster. Yes, AI will always make computer faster. I think the most important thing is the human interface.
Yes.
And the bandwidth of that.
But then if it's repetitive tasks of reviewing, it's taking care of that tediousness for you as it goes.
Yeah. I think just thinking of it more as an well, there are different sides of the value it can create, just like we're hearing here, but one is generating ideas, but
right.
That's not the only one. There's also just simply providing an interface to do things. And that's intelligent. It's not like a search bar, but rather it understands context. So an interesting example of that, and this is actually unique. So even like Revit is different from what we can do in XR because you have added context when you're in a headset. So specifically, if I'm looking up at a fitting, I can say something like, what other project did I use, you know, an alternate fitting on? And it has the context of exactly, you know, what I'm looking at, the BIM data that underlies that, without me having to, you know, copy that and paste it into a prompt, a search prompt and so on. And that's just fascinating to me. So exciting. Yeah. Just the multi layers of data you can feed in and intuit into an AI to then execute a series of commands.
Taking it from that point, is into the facility management. Do you see a big push in the next 5 to 10 years of taking that and saying, okay, we've got the information that we need and we've done a lot of this planning. We used it as we went through the process of construction to make sure things were put in the right place. But now I'm going to have something that takes it to the next level. I'm going to maintain the facility. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just being able to, you know, it goes all the way down to the final person doing the maintenance procedure on the, you know, HVAC unit, showing them step by step in context, remove this bolt, pull the filter out, you know, tighten this, check this fitting. It should look like this. It's sort of like a real time training, but just creating more confidence that any of the maintenance or operational procedures are done correctly is really promising.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we currently produce data-rich models for our clients. You know, that is the goal, and that is what we have been doing for at least the last decade or more. We have a in-house aftercare team as well, run by a good friend of mine, Tony Brady, and he looks after all of the projects that pass from project completion through the first year of maintenance warranty, and then subject to contract, we could look after a building for its entire life cycle, really, once we've built it. So we have geared our systems up for the passover and the handover of that digital data to our FM teams, who are able to take the BIM model that we produce and all of the COBE data and all the operation stuff and translate it over into a CAD FM system that allows them then to maintain the building. So it was beneficial for us to have our own department, because we could sort of, we tailored it for our own results, if you know what I mean. It was our own team looking for the data. We were able to provide data, but it also got us in the way of producing data for our clients and seeing. But again, the expectation has to meet the goal. There's been many projects we've been involved in where at the very start, the client sold the dream of all this data, and you'll have all this stuff, and it's been a prerequisite of the contract that we had to do all this work to provide all this data. And then when you get to the very end, you meet the guys who are going to process the data, and it's two guys in a van and barely got a laptop, and you think to yourself, oh my goodness, you know, we've just spent 6 months processing millions of cells of data, and we know fine rightly it's going to be wasted. So, you know, I think it has to be explained correctly to the client at the end. It has to be talked about very much at the start of a process rather than an afterthought, which it actually is quite a lot of the time. But yeah, it's actively done in the industry at the moment. But, you know, it's nothing new. It's not going to be a new thing for companies to take on. But how it's collated and how it's presented is transforming now with digital models. And, you know, 20 years ago, it used to be a ring binder folder with paper, and now it's digital. It's all digital models.
And turnover to them.
Yeah, that's it. You know, everything's transformed at the minute. And just ensuring the same quality despite the change of medium. So,
well, I wanted to thank you guys for this great discussion that we've had over the last, you know, hour, talking about XR, VR, and AR. And I'm looking forward to this next generation of what it can do for the industry. So thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
That's the end of the podcast. Thank you.